is he saying invaded Aboriginal land?
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Don't call me a problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson, Pomeroy journalist. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today to wherever you're listening, your elders past and present, particularly up to the Gugul Yalanji Nation, where my guest comes from. Delene Briscoe is a strong Gugul Yalanji woman of song from the Daintree region of Far North Queensland. Her roots planted deep in Yalanji culture and gospel, which I want to talk about very soon. Gospel vocals, Delene combines the two worlds in her 2018 album, Wawu. Delene's career spans over two decades. That's right, your mob. With some of Australia's most celebrated vocalists, including Uncle Addie Roach, Luke Bennett, Paul Kelly, Shane Howard, just to name a few. And has toured the world with two vocally exquisite ensembles, the Black Armband, which I love, and Mission Songs Project. Delene, welcome to the show, my sister.
Yalla da, how are you?
I'm good. I'm wide awake on a Friday morning. How are you feeling?
I've been awake since 5, so yes, I'm awake.
Good on you, mama. Hey, bit about yourself, your mob, your country, your culture, and for the audience that don't know of you, just a little bit about yourself, please tell her.
I'm a Gugul Yalanji woman. I grew up in Far North Queensland in a little town called Enosvale, and I grew up eating a lot of bananas because that's where they all grow. And sugarcane. and I just grew up, you know, we grew up with not much, but with a lot of love. I've got 6 siblings, mm-hmm. and we all are a year apart. So we've had a really interesting life with trying to work through it. But I think my earliest musical influence was with another family, you know, blackfellas hand, you know, kids around. So I grew up partially with another South Sea Island family, the Heron family in Far North Queensland, and I'm really honoured to have had that experience because he was, my father was a really amazing jazz vocalist. Wow. And then the mother was a pianist. So I grew up with that initial influence. And then I just continued singing in church. My dad was a pastor, and we just kept singing through church. Me and my sisters toured for about 10 years as Briscoe sisters. And then I moved to Melbourne and kind of did my own thing from there. But, you know, now we're getting back together and singing again now that we're all in the same, vicinity of each other.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll be recording and releasing that soon, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, no, we can't wait. We need your music, Delene. Hurry up. I really want to talk about this gospel influence because it sounds like you should have grown up in New Orleans, you know, because I didn't really know that your father was an amazing jazz vocalist, but I knew he was a pastor and stuff like that. I've been lucky.
No, that's my other father. So I grew up in the other South Sea Island Aboriginal family.
Yes.
So my father was a white man and really didn't have much rhythm or couldn't sing very well. But, you know, what he lacked in that, he had in heart and soul. And so, you know, all the blackfellas loved him for that.
Yeah, it's, you know, because I've known you and your family for a while now, and you're such a cultural woman. Like, you love your Gugul Yalanji culture. And how does that fuse with singing and performing and, I guess, that gospel, that deep gospel background that you have? Because, you know, gospel's amazing. Like, a lot of people think, oh, it's church music and whatnot, but I was lucky enough to travel to the States in my early 20s, and I went to a gospel church in the deep south with a couple of mates. We just rocked in, and it was one of the most profound experiences I've ever had. It was like a movie, you know. There's just like 1,000 blackfellas in there just singing church hymns and just going nuts, and it was just crazy.
Well, there's two different types of music, I guess. There's the church music and then there's gospel.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, growing up, I listened to a lot of gospel music. We didn't have a radio or television in our home, just like vinyls, gospel vinyls, all different genres of it.
Yeah, right.
So, although, yeah, we had country gospel, we had, you know, gospel, and then in the end there was like reggae gospel and that, all different kinds of gospel. So we still had the same influence of music, just that it came from a... And one thing that I got from that is the messaging and how to write songs with powerful messages. And it didn't matter what the message is, but that I learned how to sing with conviction and from the heart and soul, which we do anyway as Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
And so it's been an interesting journey. Now, a few years back with Cairns Indigenous Art Fair, I did a project called Cultural Heights, and we went back to some of these communities and with the elders and started to... we went back to the old way of singing. We call it Oongwabari. And when we were there... Some of the old people were saying, some of our elders were saying, they were never allowed to sing that style of music.
Wow.
Growing up, they had to secretly hide, and even their elders had to hide and sing that style of music, their Oongwabari, traditional songs. And so we went back, and they did it to a packed-out show, two nights, packed-out show at the Cairns Performing Arts Centre. And here they were so proudly singing in their language and that Oongwabari style of song for the first time ever performing for most of them.
Mm.
But it was just so empowering and I loved the way that revisiting that old style of singing really empowered them old girls because, you know, like I can't imagine a time like that.
No, it's just, can you just explain a little bit more about, is it Oongwabari?
Yeah, Oongwabari is...
Because when you sing, sis, you sing deep from the soul, you know, and that's that gospel influence. But, yeah, can you explain to our audience more about the concept of Oongwabari?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what we call, I guess, a traditional style of singing. So Oongwabari is singing, it feels like singing the soul of the country.
Mm.
You're singing and you're crying. It's kind of like cry singing. That's another way that they describe it. Bari means to cry, but it also means to sing in our language.
Wow.
So they're one and the same. And the way that you connect with your country is crying for that country. You're showing that deep love and respect for that country when you cry and sing for that country.
Yeah.
That's Oongwabari.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing that. That's so beautiful because I was just... You know, I don't need to be reminded, but I was reminded recently at Blacktivism when you produced a Blacktivism concert here in Brisbane, and you sang with Barker, and everyone in the building was just completely moved by your singing. It just resonated, and like I said to sister girl sitting beside me at the time, it's like that just cut me in half.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I did, sis, because I was just like. The way you're singing is like that deep Oongwabari singing, now I get it, sort of thing.
It's also that experience. I've had to fight for my kids. I'm not immune from any of the system and all of that crap that we have to go through to keep our kids with us.
Yep.
I've had to do that fight, so I know what that song's about and I sang it that night.
Yeah, and so it was real personal, eh? So just to give our audience a bit of context, we had the Blacktivism series and Barker was up here, the amazing rapper Barker. And Delaine, sister Delaine, sang with her in the song, and it was just a really moving experience for everyone in that room.
Yeah, it's a powerful song. She's such a she's a truth teller, and that's her style of Oongwabari. You know, she's singing and crying for her people.
Yeah.
So I respect that. It doesn't matter what you know. We all have that in our own wow, in our spirit, that we can all cry and sing together.
Mm.
Women, men, whoever, we can all do that together. And that's what I liked about doing that, specifically that song with her, was we were crying together.
Yeah, you were. It was really moving and powerful and, just thanks for that. I get little goosebumps when I think about it because I just love music and what it does to us and our soul and our emotions. And, it's just a magic thing that you performers can do to us, the audience.
Wow.
Sis, can you tell us, because I want to talk about someone special in your life that I know, but someone that you sing with a lot, had a lot to do with, and that's Emma Donovan. I think I met you around the same time, way back when, but you two had this beautiful connection and friendship, and are just amazing singers together. I just don't know, you know, you should be well famous, both of you, you know. But I just wonder, you know, what's it like having someone like Emma to collaborate with, to talk to, and that real sisterhood in the music industry?
It's really special, you know. We're not sisters by blood, but we are, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You only find those kind of people, you know, they're kind of once in a lifetime kind of people. And we've been really, really blessed to have gone on this journey together. We've been singing for about 15 years together.
Yeah.
And we've, you know, collaborated, written some beautiful songs, but also been a part of some really amazing projects along the way. And you know, now we share our life, you know, with each other. And it's a special thing to have that. Also, there was the three of us that we toured together, me, Emma, and Annie Lou Bennett.
Yes.
And so she was a really strong mentor for me in that group that we toured with Black Armband. We did that for about 10 years. And then, you know, but she was also the influence, one of my earlier influence on my very first tour with Briscoe Sisters. We were supporting Titters on their last tour. So, you know, I've had a relationship with her. And so, you know, now my kids, they got in her language a name for grandmother for her. So she's, and I think what we've really realized as Emma and I have come through this industry is that in the black music industry, we're family. Yeah. And we support each other.
Yeah.
We ain't about competition. It's about supporting each other. And because we're only a very small group, you know, we're a very small industry and we have to support each other. And so every, you know, way we turn, everyone's on their own journey, but actually we're all in it together. So I think that's probably the most beautiful thing that I've learned coming into that friendship with Emma, and all the different stages we've performed on over the years and different phases of our lives, you know. It's been really a beautiful journey, but also something important. And now we're trying to, through shows like Blacktivism, trying to pass that on to the next generation to go, hey, look, we're here to prop yous up and support yous, and we all support each other. Like, for Emma and I to sing backing vocals for everyone throughout the show, that's us supporting the young ones coming up.
Yeah, and we saw that firsthand. And I remember Crystal West coming on stage at Blacktivism and brought the house down. It was off the back of, you know, just exactly what you said there, sis. You're bringing the next gen through and allowing them to take the stage with, you know, so much confidence and truth-telling in them. So it's just a beautiful thing. And you're exactly right. I think what I've learned from UMOB over the years is that it's about truth-telling and storytelling. It's not about being rich and famous as a singer, is it? It's not, not about being the number one, you know, the kings or the queens of singing. It's about truth-telling. And I remember you and Emma and Lou Bennett singing at Marbaloo Festival in Jabiru in 2012. I think you mob as singers, you probably take it for granted how much you impact the audience. And, like, there's things that I just remember from years ago, just like, oh, I remember him in Marbaloo. I remember this, I remember that, because the music stays with you. It's almost pauses the memory and time, and it's a really magical thing. Speaking of magical things, I just want to talk about your grandmother for a second. I was lucky enough to travel up to the Daintree with your brother Lukey many a year ago now, when we were both a bit younger and didn't have as many grey hairs. But I got to sit with your grandmother, and she taught me the story up there around the Daintree and the country and the culture. And I've never been up that way. It was totally foreign for me. But it just goes to that, you know, we come from great matriarchs and great teachers. And I think, you know, that influence that our elders have on us just makes us the people who we are today. And I think that's no more true than, you know, with you, sis. So, you know, how important is it to have those old teachings and to be grounded and to sit down with elders, you know, like your grandmother?
You know, I always say this. Our family actually has got a stall up at Kaiapa Walker Creations, and it's all of that work and those artworks in there are product of the legacy of my grandparents. Both my nan and my granddad were really strong cultural people.
Yep.
And so we've been really blessed, you know. Also, you know, I come from two generations of stolen generations. And this is why I sing in language, because my mum wasn't allowed to talk it.
Mm-hmm.
But she went back, found her family, and she kept language in her head. As a little girl, four-year-old girl, she recited them words to keep them. And so she taught them to us. So I think that strong will to keep culture alive, even in her own mind, comes from her parents. And I know that I come from a really blessed culture, because we've still, you know, held on to a lot of ceremony and culture and knowledge. There's not many along the East Coast that can say that. No, not enough, I reckon, anyway.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's so important. I think the biggest thing, and I didn't even realize this, that my kids have picked it up too, just by hanging around me, is that when I'm sitting with elders, is to listen. You know, it's that's probably the most important thing, is, and I never took that for granted, and that was taught to me by my parents. And you know, for some people, they feel like they've got all this new knowledge, and they're learning all these new things about the culture and how science is connected. It's all connected, and actually science is just catching up with what we already know.
Yeah.
And so, like, some people have a tendency to talk more about, oh yeah, the science says this too, but actually when you listen to the elders, they already knew it. So I think, yeah, that's what I think is most important, is just listening to our elders. Yeah,
there's a big difference between hearing and listening, isn't there? But I was lucky enough, I remember I told you a story at Blacktivism. I actually sat on your nan's floor and made a dilly bag, just a little woven one, small one, and went down and got these little bits and pieces he said I could take home. And I've still got it. It's at my mum's house. I just want to let you know that 20 years later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was real special for me because, you know, coming from my country, and it's flat and it's pretty dusty and red, and to go up to the Daintree and up to Cookayalli, oh, it's like, geez, I'm in Jurassic Park, man. There's dinosaurs up here, you know. like the cassowaries, Jesus.
Freaky country.
They are dinosaurs. Yeah, freaky country up there for a Maori boy, I tell you. But I just absolutely loved it, and something I always treasure to this day. Hey, sis, it is NAIDOC week, and the theme for NAIDOC is Get Up, Stand Up, Show Up. I just want to see what that means to you. I know it's a bit of a cliche, we ask what NAIDOC means to people every year, but just in terms of that theme, I just wonder what Get Up, Stand Up, Show Up means to you and your fam.
Yeah, it's what you said, it's truth-telling. To me, that's what that means, is like in everything we do, and which we do naturally, is we just tell our story. For me, it's about not just our mob, it's also about other mob. You know, put your money where your mouth is, you know, like don't talk about acknowledgement of country. Acknowledge that country. And actually acknowledge the people who are the custodians of that country, you know. So and do that in every way. So one of the huge things that I've been doing more recently is shifting the way that people, like, deal with us. So institutions and bigger companies and festivals and things, and saying, well, this is how you did it in the past, but this is how we do it. And now, like, take me back to Uncle Bart Willoughby's song, Take It or Leave It. This is how we do it. Now you take it or leave it. And so I'm picking and choosy about what I do these days. And that's where it comes from. It's like you take it or leave it our way, or don't worry about it. It's, you know, done. So it's about that truth telling and being true to yourself as a sovereign Indigenous person. Like, you don't need to conform or do things any other way but our way. Mm. And so that's what Get Up, Stand Up, Show Up is like every day. Not just going to marches, not going to, you know, any, like, going to concerts, not showing up every day in your own skin and being true to that. as a black fella.
Yeah, yeah. Getting me pumped up here. I want to go to a rally down.
Let's go rally.
No, but it is. It's and I love that you spun it because we always think about the theme in our own selves. But I think when you think, you know, when you put this on our allies and non-Indigenous people out there listening, we want you to get up. We want you to stand up. We want you to show up and not be gamming about it, you know. Don't just talk about it and post a black tile and a Black Lives Matter post. Do this stuff every day. Get out on the street and stand with us and help affect the change in this country that's so desperately needed.
Yeah, be the change, because it only takes one person, like everyone as individuals, to do it, and then the collective comes together and makes the massive change. But it's just one at a time, one person at a time.
Yeah. Hey, we've got the NAIDOC ball coming up. Saturday night, sold out, people, sorry. You can probably sneak in somehow. No, Gammon, don't do that. But you're performing, sis, and it must be, you know, because you guys haven't been able to perform for a couple of years, and I've said this to a few performers, but it just must be magical to get up in front of your own mob, you know, up here in Queensland and perform with a bunch of other great artists as well. But what can we look forward to?
Yeah, I have something special for tomorrow night, just honouring some of the people that have got up and stood up and showed up for us. So I'm pretty pumped about it, actually. It's something different for me, but I'm going to bring that Yalanji language and share some of that wawu, that spirit from my country. But, yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it, and I can't wait to share it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's just going to be all doubled up and get down there. And it's great to see that you're going to be honouring some local mob here. Can't wait to check it all out. Hey, just before we wrap it up, because we're going to get off early today because it's a big Black Friday, we're going to get down to some rallies, and you've got to go get ready for the next couple of days, sis. But one of our friends was in the news recently, and I just want to, I know you're pretty close to her as well, is Mawali James. She had the cultural face tattoos, and the story blew up here in Brisbane, and I was actually pretty impressed with some of the mainstream media coverage. They're actually doing a good job for once. But it's really interesting, sis, our culture is, you know, she's a PNG girl, but it's really interesting in it that culture still can be such a polarising figure when you've got, you know, face tattoos or cultural just ink anywhere.
Yeah. Smile is my niece, and she's worked very closely with her mum to revive the tattooing for their mob or continue that now. So she's like second generation reviving and starting to continue it. It's really interesting. It just shows how far away from culture the mainstream of this country is.
Yeah.
Like, they just got no concept or idea of what those markings would mean to a young Papuan woman. You know, specifically the ones on the face, they're always of utmost importance.
Yeah.
So, and not just, you know, that they refuse her entry. It's not even about that. It's about not even respecting someone's culture. That's discrimination against her cultural identity.
Yeah, they didn't even apologise. They just said, oh, this is our policy, deal with it. I was just thinking about that too, because a lot of Canadian, American and New Zealand mob have got facial tattoos, cultural tattoos as well. And so it's created this big story and this big debate, which is just ridiculous. And it was actually kicked on because I saw last night there was an ambulance driver on Channel 9 News is saying that he's got facial tattoos and his patients actually like it. So it's become this big this big different sort of yarn around it. So I just wanted to put that in context, as Mawali actually looked after us at Blacktivism, and she was just the sweetest sister. Like, you know, and to see her cop it in the media and stuff like that, I was going to throw down for her.
No, she's deadly. She's powerhouse, and what she does and everything she does, she just excels. And they didn't realise that they're dealing with someone who actually studied journalism.
Yeah, I know.
So good job. That's what they get.
She knows how to play that social media and work you fellas up, you know.
Yeah.
So it was great.
Wrong person. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about it, mate.
Picked the wrong sister there.
Yeah. But it's deadly to see. And I said to her, you know, it's really I'm so proud of her for doing that, because I've got young Papuan girls, you know, my daughters, and if they want to get their face tattooed, they should be allowed to walk into those places. You know, yeah. and be proud of those markings.
Yeah, because it's funny, isn't it, how they go, oh, this is criminal tattoos, we're criminals. You know what I mean? Because that's the whole facial tattoos, because of bikies and whatnot. So they said, oh, you just can't come in because of criminal activity. So it's funny how they link cultural tattoos, amazingly, to criminal tattoos.
Yeah, yeah. No, they just got no idea. That's what it is.
No.
Get educated, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
Like, educate yourself. You live in a multicultural country. We all do.
It's funny that she's a journalist. Good stuff. Hey, Colleen.
<Yeah.
laughs> Sorry, got the giggles up. It's Friday. Happy NAIDOC week out there, everyone. Delene, thanks for joining us today. I'm going to let you get on with your day. You're probably up there at the sunny coast, and looking forward to catching up with you and the fam tomorrow. And thanks for joining us on Let's Talk today and sharing a bit of your story. We're just really looking forward to the NAIDOC ball tomorrow night to celebrate all things Black excellence.
Oh, Dudley, thank you so much, brother.
I've been looking forward to you, sis. And like I said, yeah, I'll catch up tomorrow night. Happy NAIDOC week out there to all you Black beautiful mob. Hope you have a great weekend, and look after yourselves. You've been listening to Let's Talk on AAA Murray Country.